top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind a Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
I love you.
Like his grass. I came here for Rex.
You come for one of them, you get them all. Drake runs this town. Meth, guns, he's the mayor, we're all just paying rent.
No, I don't want to see a whole lot of new faces, you know. No feds, no ATF.
I'm gonna enjoy killing you.
We got a score to settle, don't we?
So if you're gonna shake the cage, go for it. But leave me out of it.
Don't you remember?
To fight like that.
From fighting.
Here's episode 328 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Stone Cold Steve Austin in Recoil. Now there's a terrible title for you. Sounds like some kind of horror fiction a la H.P. Lovecraft. He recoiled in horror upon seeing the body. This is a bad title, and true to form for bad movies, it's actually a signpost. When the movie's title is uttered by one of the characters, you know you're typically in for a rough ride. And sure enough, this 2011 effort toward the tail end, someone says, you know what my mama used to say, blah blah blah, something about recoil, and then it all squares a circle. Now, speaking of the squared circle, this is our third occasion podcasting a film featuring Stone Cold Steve Austin, the Texas Rattlesnake. The first, I believe, being Maximum Conviction, an effort, if you want to call it that, in the loosest sense of the term, an effort with Steven Seagal, a particularly terrible movie with not much to recommend it, and then the much more fun and coincidentally also lensed in beautiful, bountiful, verdant British Columbia is Hunt to Kill, which, similar to this one, features Stone Cold as a vengeance-seeking mesomorph muscle man out to exact revenge on, I believe, who was it? Some goons, some unibrow goons who kidnapped his daughter. I believe he was a Border Patrol agent, so there's some skidooing and snowmobiling in that film. Otherwise, not entirely too much to commend it, although maybe it's for Steve Austin completists. And there's a certain, he does carry a lot of the weight for this film on his shoulders, and I think he does so pretty capably, and he knows his limitations, and part of wisdom is knowing one's limitations, so they use him quite effectively in Recoil. Now, speaking of Stone Cold, I was actually thinking that Stone Cold, the movie, is actually with Brian Bosworth as Joe Huff, is actually fairly similar to this one, insofar as in that one, Brian Bosworth, the ex-football player and Seattle Seahawks washout, frankly, linebacker, he is forced into a dangerous undercover role infiltrating a gang of bikers led by the always excellent and terrifying Lance Henriksen, who leads a group called of MC called the Brotherhood. And speaking of facial scars and people with catcher's mitt, leathery visages, the chief antagonist for Steve Austin in this one is actually genre legend Danny Trejo. which is pretty cool. And you gotta say that Trejo has got to be approaching 70 at this point and is pretty looking pretty gnarly and pretty ripped and pretty intimidating as the head of a biker gang. In this one, they're idiotically called the Circle, like the Circle Gang. It sounds something like geometrical. What is it? Pi times circle times the radius, whatever. But they also have stitched into their denim and their patches anarchy for some reason. I don't know. This predated the occasionally good but frequently embarrassing Sons of Anarchy. So whatever it is, this may be their slogan, and they're a gang that has presence across North America. And there's flashbacks alluding to how a member of this the MC laid waste to Stone Cold Steve Austin's family down in Texas. So they do make Stone Cold a policeman, and hailing from the Lone Star State, of course, because I guess they can explain away his not particularly protracted Texas drawl, but he's a Texan, and he's circumscribed within a certain amount of style of role that he's going to play, and he's more of a monosyllabic mesomorph muscle head, and he's not exactly gonna be Cary Grant in any particular role, let's put it that way. So yeah, in clown masks, a group of intruders busts in and lays waste to Stone Cold's family. I'm gonna call him by his character name, actually. It's Ryan Verrett. And if you think Stone Cold looks like a Ryan, I got news for you. I disagree entirely. Ryan is like the guy who runs the kegger at the frat house. But anyway, in true terrible action movie form, his entire family is wiped out and he has to exact revenge. And he, I guess, gets a lead on where the gang has gone to and ends up in Washington State, conveniently, because beautiful British Columbia, Canada's most picturesque province, is a very, very cheap place to lens a film, particularly bad action movies. And that was where Hunt to Kill was lensed, so the year after he was up there again, and BC substituting for Washington State and doing a pretty admirable job. I mean, obviously they're across the border from one another. They have the Pacific Northwest of the U.S. and in Canada, they're very similar geographies and topographies. So it's not like they're substituting Nebraska for Alaska or something to pick a rhyming state. But the scene is quite good. And the fictional town of Hope is actually a callback, intentional or otherwise, to First Blood Rambo and the town that John Rambo stumbles into, if you guys recall that movie. And yeah, it's very picturesque. I believe it's outside of Chilliwack, BC, so more in the interior of beautiful BC mountains, and a crummy podunk town in the middle of nowhere, a la Northern California Sons of Anarchy. It's a town that's just completely overrun by this idiot biker gang. And they're led by, I mean, this is a Canadian film, right? So they're led by Drake, right? Drake, not the rapper, but Drake Salgado is the character that Danny Trejo plays. And he, again, he's a menacing figure who takes great sport with beating up members of his gang, particularly prospects or anyone who crosses his path. And the gang actually has a clubhouse that contains a I guess an electrified fence octagon, if you want to call it that, where combatants movements are restricted and put in this dumb octagon and have to fight. And it's particularly, I guess, so that Drake Salgado, the leader of the gang, can keep up his boxing chops, really. Interesting to note that the actor Danny Trejo actually did a bit of time, I believe, in the California state prison system. I don't know whether he was locked down in Corcoran or San Quentin or whatever, but he looks like a tough bastard who could probably beat the holy tar out of myself, despite the vast differences in our ages. But he's an incredible figure. The Stone Cold character of Ryan tracks the biker gang down in the town of Hope, and he comes into town driving some kind of black death-proof style 70s muscle car. Talk about not exactly making any kind of effort to draw attention to yourself. When you compare again with, this is getting confusing here, but Stone Cold the movie with Brian Bosworth, Stone Cold that film, Brian Bosworth actually goes undercover. I guess he's already got the blonde mullet so he can fit in with a bunch of idiot bikers, one of whom is William Forsythe. A great movie if you haven't seen Stone Cold. Bloody hilarious. But in this one, stupidly and idiotically, Ryan Verrett just drives into town. It's almost like a Western. He comes into town with his death-proof muscle car and just sort of takes up residence in this local shitbag, fleabag motel. And this is a low-budget production. Again, 2011. It features a motel, in quotes, that looks like someone just took a sign, painted motel, and shoved it in the window of a bungalow. So pretty threadbare, pretty tight on the purse strings here in terms of budget. But they do what they can. And it's actually not too bad. It's filmed digitally, obviously. And it doesn't have the cheap look that others of its ilk have, so kudos to the filmmaker for at least presenting us with something that's not entirely terrible. There's a pseudo love interest, although they don't really consummate the relationship, but there's a woman who's a Canadian actress, Savinda something. She's an incomparably and a ridiculously beautiful woman who runs the local fleabag motel. Instead of it being a guy with sweat stains on his track pants who eats Cheetos and watches a black and white TV like we've come to expect from schlocky movies and people who run motels, or at the very least you could be on the other side of the spectrum, the fastidious, creepy Norman Bates character in Psycho. But this motel, I mean, it's a total dump, but of course a beautiful woman runs it, and she has instant sparks with Ryan Verrett, although nothing is really consummated, as Verrett is really there to exact revenge and to ultimately track down Drake Salgado and avenge the murder of his entire family. Now, Canadian-lensed film. Canadian production on the West Coast. So some of the people involved, you've got Lachlan Monroe, who's a long-time character actor in Canada. You'll recognize him from Jason versus Freddy, or is it Freddy versus Jason? I believe it's the latter. He was in Scary Movie. He was in the remake of The Predator, I believe. He's just one of these faces that he seems to appear in practically everything lensed in Canada. Between him and Nicholas Campbell, there's this certain actors who just sort of appear. It's almost like the star system here, such as it is, if you get work in something, you will continue to work and continue to work if there's anything lensed in your hometown or Vancouver or whatever it is that's coming, a production coming in, you will somehow find work in it. And he plays an FBI guy who is called in, I guess, to deal with the MC, who's just really laid waste to Hope. Hope seems completely hopeless. And it's funny when you see these Canadian productions, and God love them, they try, and even places that are topographically and geographically near identical, like BC and Washington State, you gotta love the attempts to really imbue these scenes with all things Americana, so you don't get the feeling you're in Canada. Now, the obvious ones would be covering up these speed limits so you don't have kilometers. And the other one would be in the police station. You have to have an American flag, and you have to slap up a picture of Obama or George Bush or somebody so you know that there's a sitting president, and this is particularly patriotic, and this is America. Welcome to America. And sure enough, Recoil has that as well in the mise-en-scene, and you got the office set up, and you know that the constabulary is American cops, and everyone's armed to the teeth, of course, as befitting things south of the border. They do their best, but again, there's instances where Canadiana comes through and you can't help it, and that's with the principals who are involved in this film. So it's a cast of people who speak with Canadian accents, that probably most noticeable to yours truly, who has a slight one, although not nearly as bad as let's say Going Down the Road or some of the Canadian efforts, where they totally ratchet up the kind of, oh yeah, that's we're going to go out and get some beers, eh, and get right pissed, right? So that kind of thing. But there's a couple of Canadian accents. There's also an extremely noticeable ship, and it's a BC Ferries ship. BC Ferries is the provincial, it's like a transit association, and because so much of BC has islands, along the Pacific coast, that they have ferry boats and to shuttle everyone around. And the BC Ferries logo is clearly visible on the Circle MC's clubhouse. So they've actually turned a rusted out hull of a ferry boat into their clubhouse, which seems extremely dangerous, but does add to quite a bit of, it adds a lot to the atmosphere. I mean, it's a gnarly, gross, disgusting biker gang, so they would hang out in these kinds of confines. But the filmmakers didn't exactly take too much care to cover up the fact that it's BC Ferries. So they just blotted out part of the B in BC Ferries and just sort of left it. But it's clearly that. But I guess, for all we know, the ship drifted down to the whatever sound in Seattle, and the Puget Sound, that's it. And these guys started to took up residence in this ship. It's pretty great. And Stone Cold as Verrett lays waste to a lot of these guys with a bunch of knees to the noggin and a couple wrestling moves, flips, although no clotheslines and no omoplatas or stuff flying off the top rope kind of move. So they work with Stone Cold Steve Austin in terms of his thespianism and his lack of range. I mean, the man's got the range of a child's walkie-talkie, let's say, but they do with him what they can, because like Steven Seagal, who's a equally Easter Island stone-faced and can barely run the gamut of emotions from A to B, Stone Cold is sort of more of a glowering figure, and they give him not too much to say. He just comes in on a horse. Like, this has a very Western kind of connotations. He almost comes into town on a ride. I mean, his black muscle car and that. But yeah, beats the holy stuffing out of a lot of different guys and does it very convincingly. And again, he doesn't exactly go undercover by donning some ridiculous mustache or putting on a hat or glasses or anything. He's just basically there taking on all comers. And that's kind of ridiculous, because you figure a 40 strong group of toughs in the form of bikers would be able to sneak up on him, especially in the motel, and either garrote him or take out his kneecaps or beat him senseless with some tire irons or that kind of thing. Whatever bikers are wont to do, they would have been able to do that. But in Recoil, I guess the local law enforcement, at least the ones who aren't in the pockets of the biker gang, the ones who Verrett has sussed out as being reputable sorts, who can be trusted, they help out on the front and get intelligence and see how they can help out Stone Cold's character in bringing these guys to justice. Of course, there's a guy who's also an important community figure who's in the pocket of the gang, and that's Kirby, another Canadian actor. I forget his name, but he's a grease monkey. Apologies if that's a disparaging term, and I was just watching The Best of David Putty on Seinfeld, and the colloquialism for an auto mechanic is a grease monkey. And of course, Kirby is the eyes and the ears of the gang after they put him in the octagon and beat the shit out of him, and he reluctantly, I guess, spies and lets them know the whereabouts of Stone Cold's Ryan Verrett. So again, just completely, utterly insane, stupid, dim-witted action film with and this is, I guess, we're going to segue into what we've learned, but there's this rather strange celebrity reference in this film. And I believe it's the innkeeper, such as she is, a very gorgeous brunette, who says, "Oh yeah, Paris Hilton just checked out." So a Paris Hilton reference that's not House of Wax, the horror, the Vincent Price remake of the film where she's killed. But a reference to Paris Hilton, not exactly staying, would be the type to stay in the rather dumpy, probably flea and cockroach and termite-addled, run-down, ramshackle dump. So that was kind of funny. And also another action cliche, and you gotta love them, is the cliches in this film are come fast and furious. Not fast and the furious, but they really come down the pike. Now, one of the all-time great action film cliches is when the sergeant-at-arms, or whoever the second-in-charge idiot unibrow goon comes in and has to convey the information in a debrief to his leader that there's a guy out there who's causing all sorts of trouble. Now, when we think, let's say, Die Hard and John McClane being up in the Japanese office tower and how he's killing terrorists and stuff. So the cliche is, boss, we got a problem. And sure enough, the second-in-command sergeant-at-arms, when the body count starts piling up and the bikers start disappearing and the church meetings tend to be frequented by fewer and fewer bikers. Well, boss, we got a problem. And another thing I learned is I'm an MMA fan. In the earlier days of MMA, I guess just after the Frank Shamrock and all of those types of characters, the Gracie brothers and all them were competing, there was a time when I guess some of the Expendables guys like Randy Couture and those types were really battling it out. And there's this 6'2" Montana born wrestler, and his name is Keith Jardine, and he goes by the excellent moniker the Dean of Mean. And he's a really evil looking guy. He looks like a warlock. He's got this bald dome a la Stone Cold, but he's got this really, really, really pointed goatee, and he's a really menacing figure. And the tete-a-tetes he has with Stone Cold are really good, and Stone Cold ends up breaking the guy's hand. But I've seen Keith Jardine in a number of different things, but he's managed to parlay his, I believe he was like 18 and 12, not exactly the greatest mixed martial arts guy on the planet, but he had kind of an unorthodox style, and I believe he decisioned the Iceman, Chuck Liddell. So actually, yeah, I was just thinking, the Iceman, well, there's a character in Stone Cold, speaking of cold and ice, William Forsythe, the goon character in Stone Cold, played a guy named Ice, so there's a callback there. But Keith Jardine knocked off, I believe, Chuck Liddell in a decision. He's a really weird-looking, very intimidating guy, and a lot of these terrible action movies, they have biker gangs who aren't particularly intimidating, but in the case of Stone Cold, and the movie Recoil, they really did a good job in making this band of brothers like extremely, extremely intimidating. I would say much more so than Ron Perlman and Charlie Hunnam and those guys in Northern California and Sons of Anarchy, who weren't particularly, I guess they were somewhat true to form, but I think the guys in the circle were a lot better. They have a prospect who is kind of not the most intimidating guy, but Stone Cold beats the snot out of him right in front of the group's clubhouse. So it just goes to show how idiotically Stone Cold is going after this gang. He's just like right there in front, under their noses, just waiting to be plucked off, but he doesn't care, and he uses an assortment of weapons at his disposal to best them. And there's a classic climactic tete-a-tete between Drake Salgado and Stone Cold Steve Austin at the end. I mean, of course there is. If we've learned anything in the action movie genre, it's that good help is really hard to find, and these henchmen guys are useless. They attacked four at a time, which is good, better than one at a time, which we've discussed on the podcast, which is just terrible to attack in a row. But they come at Stone Cold with crowbars, and they jump at him, but he's able to buck them off like a bucking bronco, and they just can't contain the Texas Rattlesnake. I mean, who can? In his WWE days, he made the most out of very little. He was a limited wrestler, but what he did do, he did extremely well. So you could throw The Rock into that category. So between the two of them, I think they knew maybe six moves, but they were great on the mic and had their own charisma. Now you can't, the star power of Stone Cold, I guess is very diminished when you can compare him to The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, but he's got a certain something, and he's got a certain stare and a certain glowering, and I think he capably acquits himself in Recoil, and in all the movies he's in, he's pretty good, and we can't really fault him for maximum conviction, maximally being terrible, because that was mostly on account of just the awful Widow's Peak loser Steven Seagal getting extremely fat and terrible in his later roles. So, but Stone Cold held his own in the relatively brief screen time he had there compared with the Aikido master there. So when it comes to whether this is worth your time or not, well, I mean, why the hell not? You get to see Stone Cold. You get to see a simple revenge plot with absolutely nothing but a few flashbacks to that... and remembrances of of better days with Stone Cold and his doting, loving wife. So that's the standard action movie cliche. Comes into town, rolls into town, meets up with a charming damsel, saves her, doesn't end up with her in the end. Spoiler alert. This is par for the course. This is not exactly going to upturn expectations of this very straightforward at times genre, but you'll enjoy yourself. I'm going to give this 2.75. Far more engaging and entertaining than Hunt to Kill. This very stupidly titled Hunt to Kill has a lot of hilarious, ridiculous moments, particularly when Drake Salgado is practicing his hooks, crosses, uppercuts, and the camera pans over and it's actually one of the guys who's crossed him who's been strapped to a heavy bag with duct tape, and the poor guy is getting beaten like a rented mule, hanging off the heavy bag. I was laughing. I had to text Jeff. I thought, this is so asinine. But Danny Trejo is such a badass. And he brings the goods in every role he's in. He's been in so many shitty action and horror films. But if you put him in a movie, you know what you're going to get. He brings it all the time. And so kudos for him for doing that. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, with more terrible action movies, because our book has just been released and we're starting to get some nice reviews, and people are posting images of it on Instagram and stuff, which we're really grateful for and really appreciative of. And that's Mine's Bigger Than Yours, the 100 Wackiest Action Movies. It's a really fun one with a foreword penned by Brian Trenchard Smith, the Aussie Ausploitation action film director. So hope you'll really like it. Hope you've been enjoying the podcast. We're going to delve into some more horror because, as befits the launch of our book, we've been doing a lot of action of late. But our bread is buttered via horror, and that's where we mostly earned our stripes and earned a book deal for our first collaborative effort, Death by Umbrella. So that's where we're going to be returning to. But there's going to be lots of stuff to come, including musicals and, of course, Women in Prison and all sorts of genre films of all stripes, as usual. Continue to enjoy, and we hope you're having a great 2021 so far. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Thank you.